On the Fozcast today, we have got one of my former England teammates and personal friend of mine, Big Fraser Forster. He gives us the lowdown on how much of a legend Big Ange Postecoglou really, really is. And by all accounts, what a guy. On how he got Virgil van Dijk his move to Southampton. I am not joking you. I am not bantering you. And finally, Heung-Min Son. Yes, he is the happiest man in the world, but he is also still underrated. It's the Fozcast.
There's no better feeling than a personal win, and the State Farm Personal Price Plan can help you do just that. Talk to a State Farm agent today to learn how you can bundle and save with the Personal Price Plan. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Prices are based on rating plans that vary by state. Coverage options are selected by the customer. Availability, amount of discounts and savings, and eligibility vary by state.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome to the Fozcast, mate. Before we talk about all things football and Spurs and Southampton and all that kind of stuff, you're injured. You've got a bad injury as well, something that I've done before. Talk to me about exactly what it is and how you did it.
Yeah, frustrating. Broken bone in my foot. So just a kick in training. Yeah. So innocuous, but just a slow healing one. Probably the worst bone you can break in your foot, isn't it?
So it's called the navicular bone.
Yeah.
I've done the exact same bone in my foot. I had to have a pin through mine, though. I was out for the best part of 4 months. So how long have you been out for so far?
Yeah, so 8 weeks now. So I didn't have to have surgery, so that was a good start. But it's just slow healing. Like, I think there's no blood supply to the bone.
There you go, well done.
Look at us.
No, it's true though.
No, Jared, no, it is.
That's exactly what the surgeon said to me. Yeah. He was like, I remember him scanning it and going, yeah, you broke the worst bone in your foot that you could possibly break. It's got the worst blood supply. And I was thinking, oh, fantastic. Love that.
Yeah. So I said that to me. So probably another 4 or 6 weeks.
So what did you do? You had 6 weeks in a boot, non-weight bearing.
Yeah, non-weight bearing.
But explain, when we say non-weight bearing, explain just exactly what that means and what you have to do on a day-to-day basis.
Well, obviously on crutches, can't put your foot down.
At all.
Killer was right foot, so I couldn't drive.
Oh.
So just...
Was you not tempted to do a little bit of left foot driving?
Oh.
No. I may not have been tempted to do a little bit of left foot driving.
By the end of it, you're so frustrated just not driving.
Yeah.
But I don't know. Some people are like, yeah, no problem, I use the left, and I'm just like, I can't.
I think I did it once when I was a kid and always went through the restroom.
But you can pick it up in about half an hour, all right? You've just got to trust it for half an hour.
I mean, I'm good now. I'm back driving now. So
and then when you sort of you get home and stuff like that, still not allowed to put it down. When you put it on the sofa, you got to rest it up and all that.
Yeah, it's just taking the boot off, icing it, and then you're like, oh, I want to go and get a drink. And then can't put any weight through it, but you're on your crutches, so you can't even carry anything.
You're not even allowed to hop. I wasn't even allowed to hop. You know, sometimes getting the crutches on, it's a bit sort of labour. You know, you can't be bothered. They'd be like, no, you can't hop. Even that pressure is too much through the bone, isn't it?
So what's it look like from a training point of view then? Obviously, if you can't you can't train like a normal player would do. So what does your kind of rehab or day-to-day look like during that boot period?
It's worse than being fit because it's longer hours, isn't it?
Worse than being fit.
Do you know what I mean? As in obviously you're in the gym, smashing the gym out because you can still do upper body.
Yeah.
Still do leg stuff as long as, it's seated and you're not putting weight through it and stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
Still work the left leg.
Uh-huh. Do they ever get you doing those, the battle ropes?
Yeah. Upper body CV.
It's so the worst,
battle
isn't it?
Ropes, skier machine.
Yeah. Because you've got to keep the CV up for, obviously for the heart and all that kind of stuff, keeping yourself fit, as you say. But if you've ever gone to the gym, the last thing you want to try and do is upper body CV, right? You go on the bike or you go for a run, don't you? Simple as that. Upper body CV is just,
The biggest blow ever, isn't it?
Filth, isn't it?
Yeah, it's horrible. Just feel sick as soon as you finish it.
Oh, mate.
So no, it's long. And then obviously physio stuff as well. In the water a bit. And then... It's just slow, isn't it?
Does it just get a little bit kind of Groundhog Day where it's just like another day and it always seems to be the same stuff?
Yeah, kind of. To be fair, the physios have done well and kind of like mixed it up and it's been quite a variety and stuff. But it's just frustrating where it just feels so long. Like it's so there's no progression in that 6 weeks.
Yeah.
Like it's literally
the same thing.
We just need the bone to heal.
And you're just hoping and praying that it does as well. So you've got to keep going back for scans, hoping that there's like a little bit of knitting. The surgeons can see if it started to knit a little bit, and you're just praying for the good news, basically. Because if it hasn't knitted, that's when you need a pin for it, isn't it?
Yeah. So, but he was like, I've never seen someone get this injury from a kick.
No.
And so it was just like a freak one that just happened in training. And that's football, isn't it? Do you know what I mean?
Like, you've had some bad injuries, you have as well, haven't you?
Yeah,
I remember back in the day. So Big Fraser, you're what, 6'6", 6'7"?
6'6",
and how many kilo? 100 kilo?
Yeah, probably 102.
102 kilo, right? And I remember I just had an operation on my knee and I was listening to the radio leaving the hospital, and they went to Southampton and it was Fraser Forster's gone down, he's just suffered a bad injury by the looks of it. That was when you ruptured your patella tendon. Sounds disgusting, mate.
Yeah, horrible, like horrible injury. And then it was so like innocuous as well. It was just like got a back pass under pressure, had a touch, and then you know where you're trying to clear it quick and kind of sit back a bit more.
Oh.
And then literally just felt like basically a twang almost, like, because you tendons almost a bit like elastic band.
Yeah.
So then just kind of felt my kneecap almost like twang up into my quad and back. So to be fair, it was horrendous, like for like 20 seconds. And then after that, I just had like
numb,
no pain. But obviously the tendon bends and straightens your leg. So then, I don't know, like your leg would just dangle basically.
Oh,
so horrible injury. And then surgery was bad.
And then
like 10 months rehab.
Because you've got to think the rehab for that, because of his size and because of his position, to be nimble around his goal still, it has to attach properly, and then it's all the slowly getting it moving, stretching it, closing it back in, stretching it. It's just
that was like the worst part, because you had for that it was like kind of 6 months and 6 weeks in a knee brace locked straight out, so your legs like straight on crutches. And then 6 weeks after that, then you have to get all the flexion back. And then it's horrible just trying to get it bending. And
the only way I can sort of like try and show people how bad this injury is, you know when you watch those horrible videos on TikTok, gym fails and stuff like that. And you know you get those weightlifters who, they're doing like squats or they're doing something on their leg press and it just goes the other way and you hear a snap.
Yeah,
that is the patella tendon snapping. Yeah. It's rank. It is double rank.
Oh, that's horrible. I mean, but that was at Southampton, wasn't it?
Yeah.
So at this point in your career, you've obviously signed for Southampton. Things are going great for you. How, I've asked Ben this before, but how difficult is it mentally to know that you've got like six, seven, eight, nine, 10 months out? How do you kind of keep yourself sane?
Oh, so hard. Because like you say, up to that point, I hadn't really missed anything. And then, you know, you're obviously playing week in, week out, got that focus of our playing. And then just like that, that's kind of gone. And it's so hard because when they say, oh, you're going to be out 9 months or whatever, then I don't know. For me, I needed it kind of broken down into kind of two, three, four-week chunks.
Yeah, okay. Little targets.
Yeah, almost. You're like, oh, we want to be at this point then. And like, just to break it all down, because I think if you look at 9 months,
too long.
It's too long and you can't get your head around it. And but the first few weeks are always tough, I think,
especially after
that, because like even going to see the specialist, it was like, we didn't know of anyone who had done that injury before. We knew of one player who had retired from it.
Brilliant.
Do you know what I mean?
Just what you want to wear.
So then you just sat there, your head scrambled. Do you know what I mean? Like, obviously, cruciate's horrendous injury.
But you know you're going to get back from it. You do.
Yeah.
You know you're going to get back
and,
from
like,
it.
And like, you see more and more now, especially. Whereas like the patella tendon, to be fair, there's been a few since, which is kind of a bit weird, but at the time it was like, didn't know anyone, didn't like have anyone to kind of get in touch with, or do you know, like say I'd done my cruciate, I'd play a phone you.
Yeah, of course,
like,
Or, well, you've done your Univicu, you rung me a few weeks back. How is it, Fozzie? How's it going? Blah, blah, blah. And I talked you through it kind of thing. But you've got nobody to call about a patella tendon injury. Oh,
but then that was the hardest part just to start, because it was like the physios didn't have knowledge of rehabbing one before, and didn't really have any kind of guidance. Obviously the specialists, like, this is like your rehab program type thing, but obviously it helps in football if you can ring someone and be like, or at least you know lads have come back
from
it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So, no, it was a big injury and obviously tough, but just... And the start's so slow. You were probably like this as well, where the start's really boring and tedious. But once you're in the gym and can start smashing the gym.
Seeing some gains. Yeah, getting on the game train.
I mean? But then you can literally see, like, you can see the gains because you're chucking weights on. You're on the bike, you're doing more. Like, do you know what I mean? Whereas, like, at the start where you're just lying on the physio bed, like, Compex on. Or,
oh, that's horrible, isn't it? Just tedious. Limited as to what you can. Well, we're going to talk more about the gym and getting... absolutely smashing it, because we went to Brazil 2014. We'll talk about this in a bit, and we had a wicked trio of goalkeepers, me, you, Joe Hart. It was absolutely fantastic. We spent a lot of time in the gym. I want to bring back to Tottenham then. You've been there a couple of years now. I want to talk about that first signing for Tottenham then, okay? Because you've had a fantastic career. You've played for some incredible teams. You've been at Newcastle, Southampton, Celtic. They're big clubs, right? When you sign for Tottenham Hotspurs, can you straight away see there's a little bit of difference? Can you tell this team is just a little bit above what you've been back at before?
Yeah, I think obviously, like, in kind of, I don't know, and especially like when you walk in the door, you see the facilities, you see the team, the players within the team, the standard in training.
Is it?
Like, you walk in the door and it's kind of like, I'd relate it to going away with England, you know, where you go away and standard's so high. But like, went to Tottenham and like from day one, like, you just see the standard of people, like, obviously, like, you've got Harry Kane, like, Sonny, like, just the finishing as well. Because obviously you're coming up against them a lot. And, like, just the quality of player just through the roof.
Just so goals. Like, goals all over the shop.
And saves. But, like, it was just... But that's what you play football for, do you know what I mean? Like, and for me, I get a buzz off, obviously, being tested off.
Yeah, people better like players.
That. Yeah, and then it makes you raise your game and so on, and... But from day one, it was like...
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
When migraine strikes, you're faced with a choice. Ride it out with the trade-offs of treating or push through the pain and symptoms. With Ubrelvy or Ubrogepant, there's another option. Ubrelvy is a prescription medicine used to treat migraine attacks in adults and is not for prevention. One dose works fast to eliminate migraine pain. Most people had pain relief and some even had pain freedom within 2 hours. Treat it anytime, anywhere, without worrying where you are or if it's too late. People took Ubrelvy within 4 hours of a migraine attack.
Do not take with strong CYP3A4 inhibitors or if allergic to Ubrelvy. Allergic reactions can happen and may occur hours to days after use. Get medical help right away if you have swelling of the face, mouth, tongue, or throat, or trouble breathing. The most common side effects were nausea and sleepiness.
Ask your doctor about Ubrelvy, the anytime, anywhere migraine medicine. Find more product information at Ubrelvy.com or call 844-4-U-B-R-E-L-V-Y. Sponsored by AbbVie.
This is like high, high level.
Forgetting the big boys, obviously the Harry Kanes and your Sons and players like that. Who else straight away did you look at and just go, wow, like, I knew you were good. I played against you. I knew you were good. But seeing you behind closed doors at training.
Oh, it's hard. There's like so many, like. Yeah, obviously we signed Ivan Perisic the same time I went in, and I was just like, he's a top player.
Perisic.
But he's had a great career, obviously. But we've got loads, like Romero, just wants to win.
What's Romero like off the pitch? Is he as hot-headed as he is on it?
No, I think he just wants to win at everything.
Is he?
Do you know what I mean?
Just so, like, competitive.
There'll be a 5-0 in training and he's just
flying through.
Flying into people. But like, wants to win, like Rodrigo Bentancur, top player. Like, and it's funny because obviously, like, when you've got kind of superstars in the team, like H and Sonny, like, other lads don't really get the credit they deserve, but then you walk in and there's like, but like, every player is such a good player.
Yeah.
So it's like, it's hard to even say because, like, literally the level in every position is so high. But like I say, that's why you kind of buzz off training. And,
yeah.
So when you come in at Spurs, obviously Hugo Lloris is in situ, World Cup winner. What's your kind of attitude in there? Do you kind of go in with the attitude of, wow, I'm up against it here because Hugo's at number one? Or what's your mindset?
you kind of know going into that position what I've signed up for.
Yeah.
Obviously, you know, Hugo's number one and club captain and being at the club for X number of years. But yeah, you kind of just walk in the door, and it was a new one for me where I hadn't really gone to a club as the number one. And I was just like, I'll just go in, train.
Just take it for what it is.
I'll just go and smash training and...
and see what's what.
And see where it takes you, do you know what I mean? Because you never know what's going to happen. Injuries happen, loss of form, whatever. And I was just like, oh, it's a new challenge for me. And I was like, yeah, I'll just go in and just train as well as I can. And
with goalkeepers, though, I think we always... like, don't get me wrong, when you're signing for a new club and you know you're going to be the number one, that's one thing. But you always, even then, though, you always know that you're never far away from not being number one. Yeah. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You do, I mean, don't you? Like you, I don't know about you, but I always live literally on a week-to-week basis. I always would think, if I play shit today, I won't play next week. And I would honestly always think that.
Yeah, like literally, that's goalkeeping, isn't it?
Yeah,
like if you don't perform, it's like, or like even if the team's having a sticky patch,
they might just get you out.
Manager will just be like, I need to change something, and then he swaps the keeper, and
they go away.
Do you know what I mean? And it's just like just nailed on. So I was the same. Like I felt like you can never be like, oh, I'm the number one because it's gone like that. So whether you're playing or not playing, you just go in, train as hard as you can. And then you either play on the Saturday or you don't. Do you know what I mean?
Do you reckon these big boys at like Liverpool and Man City, like Edison Alisson, surely, right? They must. We're talking about the big boys. Surely, right? They must be thinking on a Saturday. I don't even think Edison thinks of anything, mate. I think he's just thinking, when can I croy somebody? I'm just going to croy somebody today. But I reckon they must come into them game thinking, oh man, I'm going to be incredible today.
But like they must do. I mean, it's different. It depends on the team yet as well, I think.
Yeah, I suppose, yeah.
Like,
you know if you're going to be busy or not.
Yeah.
Yeah. And when, like, say you're lower down the table and you're fighting, like, managers are always under pressure as well because it's easy to lose a few games and pressure's on them. And so it's easy to then be like, right, I need to change something. Whereas I think, obviously, in a team that dominates and you're winning and you're not seeing as much action,
it's
different. It's almost like different, completely different. Not types, but like goalkeeping situations, whether you're at the top of the league or the
bottom. Yeah, it is, isn't it? Yeah. What were you like as a... so when you were a first-choice goalkeeper at Southampton, for example, at Celtic, what would you have preferred to have? Would you prefer to have a strong second-choice goalie who, like you say, is always going to be kind of waiting in the wings, almost wanting you to make a mistake so he gets his chance? Or would you want that goalie to be kind of like a young kid almost, that unless you get injured, you know you're guaranteed to be playing?
It's hard, isn't it? Because it depends as well, like what the dynamic is. And I think like sometimes it works really well where you've got the number one.
Yeah.
And then...
The pecking order sorted.
Because sometimes it just creates problems in the group. Because then if you've got the number two who is like banging on the manager's door...
Yeah, that annoys you as a number one, doesn't it?
It's
as
just
well?
Hard. It doesn't really help anyone because then it creates a bit of like...
You see that in the Premier League now, don't you? There's certain clubs that have got like real strong depth, and you do wonder what's that like in training? Because I think one of the biggest myths, like as a fan point of view, is that they think that all goalies are like, it's, you know, such fierce competition, and they're almost like don't like each other. But you guys, like you yourself, Fraser, Ben, Joe Hart, whenever you talk about the three of you going away with England, like you're all just buzzing, and it's not like you guys are the close mates within camp, not probably the competition that people think it is.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know. For me, like, I always wanted to play. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But then I think because we had such respect for each other as well, and we understood, like, our heart is playing or you're playing or whatever, I think we'd still, like, train hard and want to show our best.
Yeah.
But then you kind of had the respect for the one who's playing. Because...
without doubt. You'd get behind him as well. Like we, like say, we're first choice goalies. So we're in Brazil. We're first choice goalkeepers at our respective clubs. And we have to basically put our egos aside. We have to put everything aside and go, right, what can we do to make sure Joe is ready for this game against Uruguay, against Italy, against whoever it might. We have to do everything we can do. And that when you've got a goalkeeper that wants to be in his position... and is so hungry for it, so driven, so competitive, that does cause problems because he finds that really hard to put that ego aside, doesn't he?
Yeah. I think, like, you've got to... as a number two, I think you've got to be very, like, selfless.
Yeah.
Because I think... well, I'd find it weird if the number two said he didn't really want to play.
Yeah.
But like you say there, where we'll go away with England, like you'll have to park here, well, with the number one out of clubs every week.
Yeah.
And then it was all about, we want the best for Joe and the team.
Yeah.
But like, we'll train 100%, but make the environment as good as possible for him. Mm-hmm. Whereas like, I don't know, I think as well, a lot comes down to the goalkeeping coach and what they want. And because some will be like, I want 2-3 keepers going at it every day at the club. Yeah. But then you've got to deal with the disappointment of the other two.
That somebody's not going to be... You and can only have not, one player.
But isn't
and
that really...
And they're not going to disrupt the group. Mm-hmm. Whereas some would be the other way and be like, I want a number one, number two, number three. Yeah. That's like the order. And there's no like stress and fallout
I wasn't even going to bring this up today. Like it was the Aaron Ramsdale, David Raya situation earlier in the season. And I know it's resolved itself to an extent because it's very clear that David Raya is the first choice goalkeeper. But at that time, when it was kind of up in the air as to who was going to be playing, it was a bit sort of grey, really, wasn't it? It was, well, I've got two goalkeepers and I know they can both do a different job and I like to rotate them. And I'm thinking, no, that don't work. It doesn't work, does it?
It's really hard, I think, to get like to chop and change keepers. I think it's the same with like the back four. I think you need to build those relationships
and that consistency.
Yeah, I think it's such a hard position to keep changing, and it's hard for the keeper coming in. And
is that because it's a mental position? It's a much more mental position, goalkeeper,
100%.
than what it is being a striker, isn't it?
I think as well, you need to be able to have that freedom where, if you do make a mistake, it doesn't matter.
Yeah,
well, it does matter, but you're not thinking, I'm at the team.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you can't then go and deliver your best without the freedom. But I kind of feel like that with every position. You need players playing with freedom.
Mm.
But it is hard goalkeeping as well when it's especially so much scrutiny and that. But it's hard as well now because I think the Premier League's getting stronger and stronger.
Yeah.
And you do need probably two top keepers at every club. Yeah. I think you look at the standard of squads, like through the roof now. And you're leaving out lads who aren't making the bench who... You know, like 100% should be
probably international players.
Probably playing, you know what I mean?
You're talking like players really now hard, left out international players. It's all over the place.
I mean, it's helped having five subs, hasn't it? Obviously, that's helped from a squad point of view.
Yeah, they can come on, yeah.
But when a manager or an England coach is selecting players or scouting or looking to recruit players, how much emphasis, especially as a goalkeeper, has gone on? Are they comfortable with that position? So when you came in at Spurs, how much diligence is done on? Is Fraser a good lad? Is he going to get behind Hugo? Or when you go away with England, how much thought goes into the character of players, do you think?
I think like across the board now, I think teams look a lot more kind of character player. But I think a lot probably comes back to the manager and what he sees, what dynamic he wants to have. But I think as well, like a lot has to come down to the individual as well. Because, you know, for me coming in at Spurs, for example, I was like, I kind of know what I'm signing up for here. Like, so what can I bring to the team, the club? So like go in, train as hard as I can, be ready if they need me, like be a good guy with the lads.
Yeah.
Obviously as well, like I'm further on in my career than most. And then just trying to help lads as well. I don't know, like for me as well, like when I was younger, I had a lot of help from, you know, Shea Given, Steve Harper.
All the players, experienced players.
And they really helped me. Yeah. And then I'm a bit like, I kind of want to do that for the younger lads and help them any way I can. And so it's kind of like, obviously, you want to play and you have that disappointment of that you're not playing. But then...
But you've got other, you've got other job roles.
Guy, yeah.
You've got other job roles, though, now, haven't you? Like I say, as you're, as an experienced player, an older player that's played however many hundred games in the Premier League, you can pass some of that wisdom down onto them players that they might be world-class players. We're talking about Spurs. We're talking about world-class 21-year-old lads, right? They're incredible at football, but life skills kind of... The wisdom of it all, how to deal with the pressure and the stress and the social media and all the knockbacks and setbacks. That's the bit that I think has become a massive part of football nowadays, isn't it?
Yeah, 100%. And whether you're one of the best players in the world or not, like you all kind of have times where you're absolutely flying or times where, you know, you're a bit low on confidence, struggling, trying to find a bit of form, whatever. And I think like, you know, for me, where I've been... got however many years of experience behind me. Like, you can just pass on a bit and just be like, you know, like, just chill out, like, it'll come. Because you see lads forcing it, and I don't know. So it's just, like, trying to be a good guy around the place, like, make the lads laugh, keep it kind of, like, Do you know what I mean? Like, yeah, every dressing room, right. You need the dressing room to be as good as you can to then have success.
So. You need that guy. Do you know what he is? It's called the glue. Yeah, he is the glue, Tom. He is the guy. Honestly, like West Brom, Boaz Myhill. Yeah, he never shuts up, never stops talking. There'll be a new player coming. The first person that goes up to him was Boaz Myhill. Hello, mate. What's your name? Hello, I'm Boaz. Do you want me to show you here? Do you want me to show you that? I'll help you this. I'll help you that. He was always talking. And when we were losing and we were like on the verge of relegation, he still kept that demeanour, that upbeat, positive. No, lads, you know, we're cooking here. We'll get the lads chatting. We'll get them moving. And that is exactly what you need, isn't it?
100%. But you need those lads. And it's actually like I said before, like you've got to be so selfless.
Yeah.
Because you can be frustrated that, oh, I've not played in however many months or whatever. But you're still trying to do the best for the team because you want the team to succeed or you want to help the number one or whatever. But you need those lads who are like literally or part of their ego for what
and get best for the team.
Yeah. But without that, like the squad dynamic
would be miserable.
It
would be miserable, wouldn't it?
So. This is where it is like any other workplace, isn't it? Like you walk into an office or something, if you've got someone that's squirreling themselves off, don't want to know. It's a problem, isn't it?
If you have too many of them, it is, yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Too many of them. Well, you did get your chance to play for Spurs, actually, last season, didn't you? I think there was, what, 7, 8, 9, 10 games, something like that. 5-0 down at half-time. 5-0 down at half-time to Newcastle. Talk to me about coming on in a game when you're 5-0 down. How much fun is that, mate?
I mean, like, I didn't have a choice to do that. I mean, it's like Hugo was injured and then... It's hard coming on at 5-0 because
It sounds miserable, honestly. It does.
But it's hard coming on at the best of times as a sub. Like for a keeper especially, like it's one of the hardest things you can do. Because you literally it's like, right, you're on.
Yeah.
And you're like, what?
What?
Do you know what I mean? Like, no, like you don't have time to be like, I'm going for a jog and get warm and catch a few volleys or whatever. Like you're straight into it and you have to perform. And then for me as well, it's like back at Newcastle where, you know, I was
Of course, had a season ticket.
So going back to Newcastle always means a lot. So yeah, it was just a mad first half. And then it was just 5-0 half time and then the shot half here free coming on. And yeah, I don't know, it's just one of them. You just come on, do your best. And yeah, obviously it's something I've not done before.
The game finished 6-1, so you drew your game. It weren't your fault, all right?
But it's just, it's funny football because you just get chucked into mad situations and just have to deal with them. And yeah, like, just come on and do your best. You know what I mean? You just switch into autopilot, don't you?
You've got to go, haven't you? Yeah.
And then do your best. But this like, is you almost park what the score is as well, don't you?
Of course, yeah.
Like, and so it's just like, it doesn't matter what the score is. Even when you're playing on the pitch, it doesn't matter what the score is. You still... Need to 100%.
This is what I'm saying. If you can take the way that you are on a training pitch into the way you are on a match, because you're not on a training pitch, you're in autopilot, aren't you?
Yeah.
You're on autopilot. I would love to have spent the whole of my career being able to do the same on the training pitch as what I did on the pitch, because I would talk myself out of it on the pitch. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
I would get onto
the
pitch and I would go, well, don't mess up today, all right? Don't mess up today. And that would be the overriding thought.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Not until the end of my career. The end of my career, it would be like, well, you know, we're just going to have a nice time today. But early on, genuinely, it would. It would be, don't mess up, because you'll look a dickhead.
Yeah, you just put so much pressure on yourself.
Yeah.
Whereas if you, like we said before, if you can play with that freedom, like...
Oh, you've cracked it.
Yeah, the performances you can put in are just ridiculous.
And then towards the end of that season, obviously Harry Kane leaving Spurs. Was that... For you lot inside the team, was it a bit of a shock? Did you see it coming at least, or was it just sort of really out of the blue?
I don't know. I think kind of saw it coming a little bit.
Yeah.
But then, yeah, for it actually to happen, and yeah, it was like a real shame for the group because he was obviously so influential within the group.
Mm.
And then obviously as a club to lose a player of that calibre is always going to be tough. But I think ultimately it's his career and he can decide what he wants to
do. Football, mate, it's the way it goes.
Yeah, so, and obviously he's gone to try something new and you've got to respect him for that. And, you know, he's a top guy, top player. And
but it was almost like a new era, wasn't it? Because obviously Ange Postecoglou came in, lots of new signings and Spurs have had a great year so far, haven't you?
Yeah, obviously I think off the back of last season, it was a tough season and the way we finished wasn't particularly great. And but then obviously Ange came in and, you know, it's been like an amazing transformation around the club day to day. And I think the brand of football we're playing is, you know,
reflective of that.
Yeah. And, you know, exciting and the fans love it. And so, yeah, obviously the gaffer has been amazing. And then, you know, I think as well for Harry, just it was probably time for just a fresh challenge. I think obviously you've been at the club a long time, and I think as players you get to that point where you kind of think, is it time for me to try something new, and why not?
That was his time.
Is Ange the same behind the scenes as what we see on the press conferences and on the telly? Because he looks like somebody that I would love to have played football for.
Oh, honestly, like, I say this all the time. I'm like, I wish I was 25 again.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? And I'd kind of been in Ange's squad when I was 25. But no, he's brilliant. He's quite, like, day-to-day, he's quite quiet and lets the coaches take training.
Uh-huh.
And then kind of match day minus one and match day, like, he just comes into his element.
Does he, yeah. That's what he buzzes off.
The way he talks is, like, he could genuinely, like, be a motivational speaker. Like, it's incredible. Like, you'll be talking and you just see that, like, all the lads just kind of leaning in. And, like, you know, when you're so, like, listening, hanging off every word. But no, I think he's been fantastic for the club, and, you know, he's brilliant with the press. And
he's great, isn't he, for the press?
Like, just the way he wants to play football as well is just really refreshing. It's proper, yeah. And knows exactly what he wants, and the standards are so high that he sets. But, you know... And, like, we work hard in training, but all the lads want to work hard. Like, no one doesn't want to work hard. And, you know, obviously I think to come in, it always takes a bit of time as well. Like, it's probably the start of the process. Yeah. And kind of each transfer window that goes by, you can get a couple more in who suit the way you want to play. And so I think it's just, like, believing in him and the process. And, you know, everyone needs time as well to kind of put that into place. And but no, I think he's been a really good...
It's funny what you said about he lets the coaches take training. I saw an interview with Eric Dyer? The other day. He did I think he was with Gary Neville on the overlap or something like that anyway. And basically Eric said, Ange doesn't actually really get involved too much in training. Like you say, later on in the week, Friday maybe, that's when we'll start doing a little bit, but he leaves it to his coaches. He trusts his coaches to be able to put the tactics in place for whoever we're playing on the Saturday. But like you say, when it comes to the business end of the week, he just starts getting involved again.
Yeah, I think, you know, obviously he's got a lot of trust in his coach and stuff, but he's fully aware of what they're doing and what sessions they're putting on. And kind of every session we do will have a purpose behind it and link back to one of his philosophies of, like, what he demands at the weekend. And then I think, yeah, and then he kind of comes in kind of day before a game and then match day and... Yeah, just...
Sprinkles his Ange magic on it.
Yeah, literally. Whereas, like, I don't know, you would have had managers like this, and I have, where you see the opposite, where they try and take everything, like team meetings, all of training through the week, match day, and eventually the lads kind of start switching off a bit.
Yeah.
Because you just hear the same voice a lot, whereas I think Ange's gone the opposite, where... So then, obviously, his words and what he delivers has a huge impact when he... delivers them.
Yeah.
Whereas otherwise it's a lot if you're doing all the team meetings.
It's all, like, the sessions. It's like, you know, like when you were a kid, you could get away with murder with your mum, yeah? Because she would say, Stop it. Yeah. And you'd go, yeah, all right.
And your dad goes, hey, come
here. She'd ask you five times. But as soon as dad got home, hey, all right, sweet as enough. Because that's exactly what it's like, isn't it? Yeah. I get it.
Is that just the Is Ange your dad?
Ange's a dad, right. Basically. Ange's a dad.
We need to try and pick out the... You were talking about it earlier on the way down, Ben, weren't you? About the picture at the start of the season with your friend, Sonny. And...
Is Sonny your bestie mate, by the way, at Spurs?
Yeah, like, we've got a little group, me, Sonny and Ben Davis.
Yeah, the boys.
Yeah, we're quite close, yeah. I think probably the three oldest. Being dragged up by me, though. But, no, they're, like, we're a little group and... But yeah, like, I get on great with Sonny, like, sit next to him on the bus and stuff. And
is he the happiest, smiliest?
Is he the nicest man in the world?
Yeah, nicest man in football.
Crazy.
Yeah,
really nice.
Do you know what? One thing we always say, it's like you see sometimes on, like, Instagram, it's like football myths, and the thing we always see, don't we? Why has there never been a transfer rumor around Heung-min Son, considering he's one of the best players in Europe?
It's true, isn't it?
Yeah, he's an amazing player. Like, I'd actually say he's underrated.
Really?
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, underrated.
Do you know, like, it's different though, because, you know, like, you would have seen it with players as well. You know where you train day in, day out with them, and you see them in training and see what they're doing. And you just got to see so much more than. But he's such a good player. Like, left foot, right foot, like, literally doesn't have a weakness.
He's an absolute dog. Works his socks
works,
off.
Greatest for the team. But, like, as a guy, like, so nice, so humble. Like, treats everyone the same. Can't do enough for you. like top guy.
Oh, and what's this picture, boy. Ben? You.
Oh, it's the team photo at the beginning of the season or whatever it is, where you've got Sonny's shirt on and obviously Big Fraser, he's bought one of his shirts in for us today. It's triple XL. He's massive, isn't he? He's 7 foot.
It's not triple XL.
He's 7 foot tall, weighs 200 kilo, right? And he's got Sonny. He's got Sonny's little extra small shirt on. And like, you can just see Fraser. Have you seen Elf where he's sitting in the classroom and he's tucked into that little chair and he's massive. Mm. That's exactly what it looks like.
That was James Madison's shirt.
Was it?
Oh, was it?
Team photo was James Madison's shirt. And then I put Sonny's Korean shirt on when he came back from Asian Games. So, but yeah, just a big guy. Isn't it?
I'm just a big guy. You know? I know. Right, should we go back to Celtic? Should we have a little bit of Celtic talk?
Oh, everyone loves Celtic talk.
We've got to have a bit of Celtic talk, mate.
No, they do. They're an iconic club, aren't they?
They are indeed. What did you make of your time at Celtic? I got to know you first when you were at Celtic, actually. We were in the England squad. I remember actually going away with England and Fraser was just on the end of or in the middle of keeping about 15 clean sheets in a row or something silly like
what
that.
Was it 1,256 odd minutes, 13 games, was it?
Pathetic.
Yeah, I forget about that every time. Like, people keep reminding me. I'm like, oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Nah, honestly, like, what a club.
Really?
Like, amazing club. Fans amazing. Like, just everything about it. Just loved it. I was fortunate I got to go there, like, so early in my career.
Yeah.
But, yeah, honestly, loved, like, my first time there. And obviously got to go back for a season later in my career and absolutely loved it. And, just such a special club, like, means the world to the fans, and obviously to have the competition with Rangers and, you know, being in Glasgow, like, it's just a huge club. Like, the following is huge.
It's a very similar sort of following to Newcastle, really, isn't it? You know, like, the way Newcastle fans are just sicko for it, like, love it. So I can imagine Celtic fans being very similar to that.
Yeah, probably, and some.
Like, really?
Yeah, it's amazing. I think... Until you go and, like, you're part of it and see what it means to people and what a huge club it is, I think people probably down south don't appreciate it.
Yeah.
But it's just, honestly, it means, like, the world to them. Like, winning on a Saturday is, like, the biggest thing for them. And, yeah, just a massive club. And, like, literally, wherever you go in the world, like, people can't see
Celtic. I know.
And, like, it's such, like, I'm so privileged and honoured that I played for that club.
What about the Old Firm derbies? Have you played in a atmosphere better than an Old Firm derby?
Nah. Probably the Old Firm derby and then European nights at Celtic Park. Like, there's not been anything close to them.
He's just trying to get in a bit of Barcelona talk. That's why he's bringing it up.
I actually get embarrassed.
That's all he's bringing it up for, is that he can bring up the Barcelona game.
7th of November 2012.
That's all it is.
Nah, not at all. But,
no, honestly, just such a special club, and, like, genuinely, like, even now, like, I'll go straight on, see if they've won.
Really? First team you look for?
Yeah,
100%. Oh, that's lovely, mate. Do you know when you were at Celtic, obviously a very successful period for Celtic as well, did you know going into every game pretty much that you're just going to batter team? Did you have that much confidence? Not in a cocky way, not in a sort of like, oh, we're just going to turn up and it is what it is. Did you just know, though, that you were going to win games?
I think, like, obviously, when you're on a good run, like, kind of at any team, like, when you're on a good run, you feel, like, unbeatable. And then, but equally, you can be at clubs where you don't know where your next win's coming from. Mm. But Celtic, I think, because we had such a good, like, changing room, like, everyone was just so on board. Like, we had such a good changing room, like, good manager, like, fans supported you to the end, like, whatever happened. Like, it just was such a good recipe for success. And even when you go into places and it's like a hard game and you're trying to grind out a win, like, the number of times, like, the fans would, like, drag you over.
Sing you through.
Yeah, like, honestly. And, like, you'd score in the 90th minute and win 1-0 or whatever. It was just so good because you just, like, everyone was so wanted the team to win.
Yeah.
It was just amazing.
You don't get many of them.
You've said that before, haven't you, when you were playing at Celtic, where you felt like the fans are, like, sucking the ball into the goal almost. It's mad, isn't it?
Graham Stack told me that. So he was on loan at Hibs, and he said, we were playing away at Celtic Park, he said, and we were 1-0 up in the 90th minute, and he said, and I knew we were going to lose.
Honestly, it's like,
he said, I knew we were going to lose, genuinely. But he said, they were sucking it in. He said, I could just feel it behind. They were sucking it in. We lost 2-1.
But literally, like, even like, I remember like European games and you go 1-0 down and like, normally like everyone's downbeat or there's no atmosphere. Like you concede and then like, before you've even kicked off again, like the crowd are like cheering so loud to get you, like, to be with you and get you going. And it was just amazing, like, the influence that they had on the team.
Can we talk about Barcelona? Come on. Now that Ben's mentioned it. So that was a period in time where Celtic were doing really well in the Champions League. Was it that season or the year after you beat Ajax at home as well and had some really narrowly lost to Barcelona away?
Yeah. So that was 2 weeks before we played them at home. We lost, I think, 90th minute maybe, 2-1. But I think that kind of gave the confidence to the group before the home game of, like, we've given them a good game here. And then, I don't know, you kind of fancy yourself at Celtic Park against anyone.
Really,
like, on those nights, like, you literally, like...
Isn't that mad, even against Barcelona? Because at that time, Barcelona in the pomp. That's
2012 Barcelona.
It's the best team in the world.
So that was Xavi, Iniesta, Busquets,
Messi.
Ronaldinho?
Nah.
No, so it would have been Omri and... would it?
Nah.
No?
The great
Barcelona.
I can't ever remember. Alexis Sanchez played...
Did you get a shirt?
I've got a few because I think we had them the season after as well.
We
had 2 years in a row in the group. So yeah, I picked up a few. I got a Messi one.
Did you?
Yeah. That was in that game that we won. Got a Messi one.
Right, quick question, yeah? Before you tell me the rest of whose shirts you've got, right?
You were about to spit some out there. You were buzzing to tell me the next one.
I just remember someone else who played, yeah.
Right, so we had Gabby Bonhoeffer on the podcast a couple of weeks ago, and he said that when... Do you remember when Thierry Henry came back to Arsenal? And he only played a few games for the season. When they played Villa, he went up and got his shirt. It's a different number. It was, like, it's a super rare shirt. And I said, how much do you reckon that Thierry Henry shirt is worth? Like... genuinely, how much do you think it's worth? And he was like, I just wouldn't sell it. I wouldn't sell it. It's not a thing. Genuinely, if somebody offered you 20 grand for this Leo Messi shirt, would you sell it?
No.
50 grand.
Like, he's saying
but
yes.
But no, genuinely, though. Like, no, genuinely.
Yeah, I take checks and everything.
Do you know what I mean, though? Like, somebody, surely somebody, like, you'd have Celtic fans, you would have all sorts of fans all over the world that would pay outrageous amounts of money for a worn Lionel Messi shirt from that game against Barcelona.
Yeah, but the thing is, though, not only has he got Messi's shirt, but Celtic won.
Yeah. Genuinely, 50 grand.
I've
50
never
grand.
Even thought about this.
Would you sell it for 50 grand?
Nah.
Oh, you wouldn't, would you?
Nah, like...
No. I'm with you, mate. I am absolutely with you.
Okay.
Actually, can we divert 1 second here? Can we fully divert? I want to know about these other shirts that you've got. Actually, tell me those shirts you've got. Because I've got a funny story about me and you from when we were with England, some of the shirts that we've got.
Trying to hear. Got PK.
Oh,
one of them. Alexis Sanchez and one. I think who else I've got? I've got a Buffon shirt.
Oh, obviously. Why wouldn't you?
Yeah.
Well, you two have got quite a lot of Italian shirts between you, haven't you?
So we're going to talk about, we're going to move it on to Southampton in a minute. We want a little bit of Virgil van Dijk talk. But quickly, this story that I've got for about us, right, is we're away at the World Cup 2014 Brazil. First game against Italy, it's a tough match. We go and lose. Me and you were on the bench. We are the first ones into the shower after the game, aren't we? We were the first ones out of the changing rooms. We want to get on the coach and it's like, morale's low, everybody's miserable. And as we're leaving the changing rooms, the Italian kit man comes walking towards us. And Fraser's, obviously, we're walking out at the same point. And we see all these match-worn shirts this kit man's got, right? And Fraser's in front of me. And Antonio Cassano's shirt is on the top, right?
I remember
all of this, right? It was a Cassano on the top, and I'm thinking, that's a good shirt, that is. That is such a nice shirt. And you quickly ripped it off of the kit man and just bowled past him, right? And the kit man's like Italian, looking at us going, where do I go for the change room? And you just went that way and carried on walking with Cassano's shirt. Right under Cassano's shirt was Pirlo's shirt, right? Right under it, all sweaty still, yeah? And as you ripped Cassano's shirt and started walking, you've seen it and almost tried to, and I've gone, no, pulled it off him. And then I can see an orange shirt in there, which is the Goldie shirt, and Buffon's shirt was in there. He didn't actually play the game, but... sweet, I'm getting it anyway. So I've got these two shirts from it. The same thing happened the very next game against Uruguay, right? The same thing happened. Straight out of the changing rooms, the Uruguay kit man's coming forward. You've grabbed somebody ledge from the top and I'm rifling through it going, nah, mate, I'm getting Suarez's here. 100% I'm getting Suarez. Snaffle Suarez is absolutely buzzing my tree off. Match worn, sweaty Luis Suarez from the goal that he scored against England, buzzing. That's but I wouldn't sell him. I ain't selling him for nothing, mate. I promise you. Absolutely nothing. You could offer me whatever you want. You wouldn't sell him, would you?
I can't remember any of that.
Let's see when you fall on hard times when the podcast starts. Well, just one more before Celtic, because obviously you went to Southampton, Virgil van Dijk, but when you were at Celtic, was it very, very clear and obvious how good Virgil van Dijk was?
Yeah, I think he came in and I think Neil Lennon basically pulled him after the first session and was like, yeah, you're not going to be here long, so just enjoy it. But no, honestly, he was amazing at Celtic. Like, just get on the ball and he would just...
Just too easy for him.
Yeah. And then just a top, top player. Like, really good guy as well.
Yeah.
And then, obviously, I ended up going to Southampton. And then, obviously, Ronald Koeman knew him anyway with the Dutch connection. And you know, he said to me, oh, do you think Virgil would be good?
Do you reckon he'd be able to settle in the Premier League? Do you reckon Virgil could do it in the Premier League, do you?
Just like, yeah,
so,
yeah.
Ronald Koeman said to you... Basically, is he...
But it's like, in all of football, like everyone always asks everyone about people. And yeah, he was like, oh, Virgil, like... And I was like, yeah, 100%. And then...
How much did they pay for him? It weren't crazy money back then, was it?
It wasn't...
Wasn't it 20 or 20?
I don't even think it was that much.
I think it was like 12...
Yeah, I don't think it was that much.
12,
yeah.
15 tops. Okay. But no, what a player. I mean, at Celtic, he was just... Unbelievable.
Just like, showing off. Too
honestly, good. He picked the ball up at centre-half and just dribble.
I remember he used to get 40-yard shots off.
He used to
dribble it forward, get 40-yard shots off, and you're thinking, you're a centre-back here, Gies. Come on, relax.
Like, he would come take to the Premier kicks, League. Everything.
Yeah, he was taking free kicks.
And just finding free kicks in. And,
he honestly, still takes the odd one now, doesn't he?
Oh, can you imagine?
He should do.
11.5 mil.
He's got an incredible free kick.
Absolute hammer foot as well. Yeah. He whips it as well, doesn't he? He's got a little whip. And then obviously he comes to the Premier League, just steps it up again with Southampton, head and shoulders above everybody, wasn't he? Even at Southampton.
Yeah.
And you just knew that he was going to go again.
Yeah. I mean, what a career he's had.
Yeah.
But like, you could see early doors, like he was a top, top player. And then came to Southampton, amazing again. Just always makes everything look so effortless as well. Like, looks like he's never out of third gear or flustered or...
Well, this is... I've got you here now and I've got to ask you this because I made a statement I'd say a year ago, right, on a podcast, and I said that I think Virgil van Dijk, in his pomp, we're talking when he first signed for Liverpool before he had the ACL injury, I think Virgil van Dijk might be, in that era, the best centre-back that's ever lived. Yeah? That's
what I said. In that moment,
in that moment in time. Yeah? At that moment in time.
He's got to be right up there.
Thank you. That's like all I needed.
But even like did his ACL and then come back.
He's still head and shoulders above everybody
else.
He's
top. Yeah. Like you look at the season he's had, he's been incredible. And I think always like as well, people always want to kind of like big people up and then bring them down a bit. But no, I think he's like incredible player. Just makes the game look so easy.
That's exactly what it is. You know he's got it under control.
Yeah.
You know when they have that rapid centre forward running through and you see Virgil crabbing alongside him, stalking him.
He's stalking him.
He's stalking him.
Literally.
And you just know he's got it under control. I don't care if it's Mbappe, Haaland, Hoyland at the weekend. He's got it.
But he's like he's so nice to play with as well, like as a keeper.
Yeah.
Because as well, like he doesn't really do anything like rash or
he's predictable.
You know exactly what he's gonna do. Yeah. He's so calm. Like it's just like a Rolls Royce in front of you. Like top defender. Like
I love this.
Do you know, like, just so easy to play with because, and then when you build that connection, you almost know what he's going to do because he's so predictable. Like, doesn't try to do anything stupid. If it needs clearing, he'll clear it. But, like, just...
Always does the right thing.
Yeah, and he's very, like, he's very good at building that partnership with the other centre-back.
Yeah.
You know, the wing-back, the keeper. You know, so you always have such a good, like, connection. And,
is he much of a talker, Fraser, on the pitch?
Yeah, non-stop.
Really?
Yeah, like really good communicator and like always has been and really good like team player as well. Like very like selfless and, you know, really good to bring the team together. Like he would be a very good captain. Obviously I'd had him as captain a little bit, but not out and out captain. And then, just a great one for the changing room as well as what he delivers
on the
pitch.
The full package basically.
Yeah, 100%.
We need to talk about this Southampton team. Right, so you had a 6th place, 8th place. Ben, rattle off some of these names.
Oh, mate, this is... So this is what, 2012?
No, 2015, 16.
So this is 2015, Fraser. We're talking along the lines of Sadio Mane, Jay Rodriguez, Shane Long, Jose Fonte, Victor Wanyama, Dusan Tadic, Oriol Romeu, James Ward-Prowse, obviously Van Dijk, Graziano Pelle. Oh, how handsome was he, by the way? How handsome was he?
Sadio Mane?
We said
Sadio Mane.
Wow, Charlie Austin, Matt Target. That's some squad. That is some squad.
I think that season and the season before, we had just an amazing squad. And obviously when I first went, it was kind of, Koeman had just come in and it was that transition, I don't know if you remember, where they'd lost a big chunk of players like Adam Lallana, found Luke Shaw.
Did Lovren go as well?
It was kind of like Liverpool just kept coming in and buying and spending money.
Was it maybe?
It was literally like a rebuild job, like the recruitment and everything from like the club, and Ronald Koeman was like amazing over that like period of time. And you know, we just had an amazing squad, and like that ultimately reflected in, you know, where we finished in the league.
Where did you finish those years? It was top half, wasn't it? Both years in a row.
Oh yeah, I think McCoomin.
It was top. It was like
just missed out on
six-ish, seven-ish, eight-ish or something, wasn't it?
I want to say sixth, and then maybe seventh. McCoomin, and he was like a born winner.
Yeah,
and then like his standards were so high, and then we kind of just like, because we were playing so well, you just fancy beating any team.
Really?
You know, like we were saying before, where you turn it up to teams, didn't matter who it was, and we were like, we're going to give them a good game.
Do you know, so you got Koeman as manager, Dutch manager. You know, throughout your career, have you noticed a sort of a pattern of what that manager would be like? So if you've got a manager from Holland, for example, you know what that football is going to be like. You know, if you've got an Italian manager, Conte, you know what that's going to be like. You know, have they got sort of like a stereotypical character and style of play about them as well?
I mean, probably when you look at how they wanted to play, I think managerial wise, it's a lot of difference between individuals.
Yeah.
But I think, like, I don't know, I think, say, like Koeman at Southampton, there was just so much respect for him.
Mm.
Like, he's Ronald Koeman. Do you know what I mean? So then instantly he had so much respect, and I think his standards were so high because of what he delivered when he was a player. And like, I absolutely loved him. I thought he was amazing. And then I just, every manager is so different. Yeah. Like, it's amazing because like football's just one game, but then the difference in like managers or how they want to play is like night and
day. Have you had managers in your career where they've come in and, because you know what it's like as a goalie. I've been at clubs where I've had a manager come in. I had one at West Brom, Pepe Mel. And he wanted me to play out from the back. He wanted me to play these lovely little passes into the right back, into the left back, under pressure, play little triangles. I'm thinking, I can't do that. That's not my game. I don't know how to do that, and I don't enjoy it either. I really don't. Have you had managers asking that of you in your career as well?
Yeah, like, I mean, even now, like at Tottenham, this is the way we play. So you either learn to do it and deliver it, or you'll be gone and they'll get someone else who can.
Yeah.
So you have to be able to adapt, I think. But it's hard as well at times. But then a lot depends on the manager, what they want. But ultimately, you have to deliver what the manager wants if you want to play at that club. And then, but what I've kind of noticed as well is you get managers who will be like, I want to play this way. But then in training, all the training's built to play in that way. Like every exercise will then help you to play how he wants to play.
And get more comfortable at doing it.
Get more comfortable, get better. You're playing in really tight areas. Yeah. So then when you go on the Olympia 11 pitch, like you feel like you've got all the time in the world like to find passes and play out. Whereas like also like earlier in my career, I've had like managers say, oh, I want to play out from the back. And he just drops the ball and there's no tactics. No one knows what they're doing.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, that's great, but
my right back's hiding behind my centre back. Yeah, and my centre back's hiding behind the other centre back. And you're like, who do I pass it to?
And there's no structural setup at all, or no tactical setup. And then you're like, well, that's a great idea, but everyone has to be on the same.
Yeah, you have to show us how to do it.
Yeah, like everyone has to be on board.
Yeah.
And you need to know when you get the ball, that player's going to be there for you. And so, yeah, I mean, but even like now, I think that's where training's so built for how he wants us to play.
Yeah. So if you get the ball, you know your right back is going to be over there on the line waiting to take it from you.
But it's kind of the same for everyone, because it'll be like people will be like, oh, I want to play. But you need to know your centre mid's dropping.
Yeah.
And your centre half's there for you. And
you all need to build that trust with each other as well.
Because
obviously if you want to play and then no one shows, then you can't play. Do you know what I mean?
Can I ask a question about communication? I think if I was a manager, Fraser, right? Genuinely, yeah. I would make it the most important thing that I would want from my players is everybody talks to everybody on the pitch and tells everybody everything. Always constantly talking. So if you're playing a ball into somebody, he's got his back to play, you tell him if he's got time. You tell him if he can get on the half. You tell him everything. One touch, two touch. You play it. Because that just solves everything for that player. It does. It genuinely solves everything for that player, doesn't it? But I don't think anybody really talks about it. Nobody understands just quite how important those little communication pieces are.
Yeah, it makes like a huge difference. Because like, can you imagine being a keeper and not saying a word in a game?
Imagine.
Do you know what I mean? And not communicating.
But they as they get further off the pitch, it's like we'll let you off not talking. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Whereas like it makes such a difference, just the communication on the pitch. And like for a keeper as well, like you have to talk for 90 minutes.
Yeah.
And then I don't know, I just think I've probably not thought about other players like further up the pitch doing it, but then I don't know, surely they do, but
no, I don't think they do.
I don't know, like
I don't think they do, honestly.
But for a keeper it's just like such a big thing that I don't know.
You couldn't imagine not doing it, could you?
Oh no, if someone would say like, oh, play in silence. Like Neil Lennon used to do this as part of like a small side of the game. He would just be like, right, no one can say a word.
What?
Like, honestly.
To prove what though?
But just to make the game harder.
Oh, wow.
And then obviously that then makes you have to be like.
Head and a swivel.
More, yeah. So you need to know everything because no one's helping you. And it was actually like really good because then you'd be like, your awareness and like everything would have to be like through the roof. Yeah. Otherwise you're getting caught on the ball. And then like, you would only do it for like one small side of game or one small game or so it'd only be like 5 minutes and then he would be like, right, you can talk, and then everyone's like everyone wouldn't shut up, do you know what I mean? Yes. And then like
it's good though, yeah, I like
but
that.
It's like all part of training where it's like making the game harder so then when you actually step on the match pitch like it seems so much easier because then you're all talking,
more space,
or like it's like where you're training such a small area and training and then you've gone a full-size pitch. And like you feel like you're in acres. Do you know, like
on the big pitch.
So yeah, it's just part of training, but communication's a huge part.
Yeah, lovely.
Well, about this is we spoke about this earlier, Ben, and you were not surprised because obviously Fraser's a very good goalkeeper, but it's not very often that goalkeepers get a Premier League Player of the Month award, is it? So
it's not very. I don't know how many times a goalkeeper has won a Premier League Player of the Month award.
Yeah, I think De Gea has.
Yeah, De Gea might have won a couple. To be fair,
he got one. Last season.
Is the Player of the Month award voted for by fans?
I've no idea.
Don't,
I'm sure no it is. Yeah. I'm sure it is.
I don't
nowadays.
Think it is.
No?
I don't know. I'm not sure.
We'll have to have a little think about that. But can you remember that little run of games which won you that? Can you remember what happened or who you beat or did you keep clean sheets?
It was straight after I came back from a 10-month out.
Yes, it was. So it was I remember this. I knew it was. Yeah, I remember
it was literally,
this.
I think, the first 4 or 5 games straight after that. So being out 10 months. Kind of got chucked back in.
Yeah.
Didn't feel ready to go back in. But I think Martin Stecklenburger coming on loan was injured. And then they were just like,
are you going to have to go in, mate?
They were like, fancy it. yeah, I'll give it a but like, you know, when you step on the pitch and I was on the pitch and I'm like, I ain't ready.
Yeah.
Like even just trusting, like,
Even the rehab, you knew it wasn't like, fully good to go. Yeah.
I knew it was strong, but then obviously, you know, you have that period of like, I know like the knee's all good, but then just getting back into match mode.
Yeah,
you know
to trust
mean?
It. I think to trust played, it fully.
I think I played 1/23s game.
Wow.
And then it was like, right, you're playing.
The wall. And then I the just wall was back in.
Just didn't.
That was his nickname, by the way, the wall.
Just didn't feel ready for it. And then, but yeah, ended up going in the team and then we kept, I think, 4 or 5 clean sheets in a row. And ended up player of the month. So.
May as well.
But like James Ward-Prowse always just says to me, like, oh, I got you that award. Because I think he cleared one off the line.
Did
at
he?
Arsenal.
Yeah.
He was like, oh, I saved you. Got your clean sheet there.
Isn't that, that mad though? Like, you know, like you can do whatever you want on the training ground, right? So when you've had a big injury like that, 10 month, whatever it is, yeah? Everything on the training pitch, it's like controlled, it's controlled, it's controlled. Nothing, and I mean this, absolutely zero can replicate exactly what goes on a match day. The adrenaline, you're able to do so much more. You're able to push yourself so much harder, run faster, spring, everything, yeah? That your body hasn't ever seen that until you get to actually do it. And it's only at that moment will that injury either, yeah, we can deal with this, or you're back to square one again. It's so scary, isn't it? Yeah. It's such a scary place to be.
It's so hard where you've had that chunk of time out. Dealing with the injury is one thing, but even like to not really have played football. It's not like you've had a full pre-season of friendlies to kind of get going again and whatever. It was just like, right, you're playing. To be fair, they kind of said to me, like, do you want to play?
We don't expect miracles, Fraser. Can you just help us out?
And then like I was like, yeah, like, but I don't, probably would never have felt ready until you get chucked in. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? And then you just deal with it. But yeah, obviously went on a nice run.
Love it.
He's top player of the month.
Right, Fraser, you played with some top players and some characters as well, right? I'm going to throw a few names at you and you just give me a little bit of a rundown, a lowdown of what they're like. So Scott Brown at Celtic.
Oh, amazing player. Like, top player.
Could
like,
he have played in the Premier League?
100%.
Yeah.
But like a really good guy, top leader, like everything you want from your captain. Like, he must be... If you're on the other team playing against them, he must be horrible. you know when he's on your team. Oh. But then, like, day-to-day around the training ground, like, so chilled, has a laugh. And then on match day, just switches into game mode. And just,
he is Mr. Celtic, isn't he?
Yeah, like, really good guy.
Have you seen the picture that we're doing around the last couple of weeks? So Scott Brown did an interview. He's got this full head of hair.
Yeah.
He's got this full head of hair. And everyone's like, where's the hair come from, Scott? And he was like, oh, I used to just shave it like back in the day because it made me look hard. And they were like, shut up. And everyone thought you were bald. And he was like, no, I just literally shaved it. Like, and now I can grow it out and that's it. It's fine.
Honestly, just he would shave his head like in the hotel before every game. Like night before every game, he would shave his head and fit the part, really.
Yeah, it worked though, didn't it? It worked. It's a good one. Victor Wanyama. What? So you was with him at Celtic and Southampton. Yeah. Did you get him the move to Southampton the same as Virgil as well?
He got me the move. No, he went first. And then, like, incredible player.
Yeah.
Like, Celtic, he was, like, so big and strong.
He
like,
just ran the show, didn't he? Yeah,
he was so good. And then, obviously, came down south and did the same down here, you know. But such a funny guy as well, like...
Do you remember that tweet he put out? He put, what was it? I'm having spaghetti.
I had spaghetti last night. It was nice.
Yeah. Is that Victor Wanyama, yeah?
I believe so. Like, it was one of them where, like, I think when we were at Celtic, like, Twitter just started.
Yeah.
And that, I think that's one of them where no one really knew what Twitter was. And then Twitter's just kicked right on.
I think they've done all right for themselves, haven't they?
And then... But you see loads of his tweets, right? I think people just didn't really have a clue. And then
Wayne Rooney, loads of
to
them.
To be fair, though, like, maybe just wanted people to know that he had spaghetti and he liked it. So. But what a guy, honestly. Like, such a nice guy. Isn't he?
Oh, God. And we've already spoke about him, but Harry Kane. I want to ask a question. Is he the best finisher you've played with?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Him and Sonny, definitely.
Just ruthless.
But H is just, like, so ruthless. Like, you never think he's going to miss. Like, but he scores every kind of goal as well, do you know what I mean?
He does,
like,
doesn't he?
Just appears at the right time, and but, like, so much power in the shots as well.
Even if his left foot, even with his left foot, the power he can get in that left foot is phenomenal, isn't it?
Yeah, like, left foot, right foot. But, like, same again, like, top guy as well. But just amazing player.
James Ward-Prowse, somebody who I think is still underrated. Yeah, still underrated. You said it about Sonny earlier. I still think James Ward-Prowse, if I was a manager, I would love to have a James Ward-Prowse on my team.
100%. I think, you know, I think he's underrated as a player for starters, but what he brings off the pitch, like, he's a real, like, role model and kind of leader by example off it. You know, he's one of the most professional people I've seen. And then, it's set piece delivery and, like, what he actually brings to the team, like the running he does for the team, you know, like, second to none.
He's the sort of player you want on your team, because if you're in goal and you have to face a James Ward-Prowse free kick, he scored a free kick direct at the weekend, by the way, sorry, a corner. He scored a corner direct from the corner, yeah? Went in the goal, literally just scored from there. It's a nightmare to face, isn't it?
Oh, his delivery is incredible. Like, you get so much pace on it as well. And, literally like 19 times out of 20 is bang on the money.
And finally, before we go into some quickfire questions, Sadio Mane.
Oh, I mean, when he first came to Southampton, I think it was kind of like he could literally do anything, like to the point where I don't think he was sure what he was going to do.
Yeah.
And but you know, like where just
he would still do it.
It was just incredible. And then yeah, obviously went to Liverpool, and I think he just went to a whole different level again.
Yeah.
I think obviously training with the players he trained with and working with the manager he did, and obviously the hard work he put in, and just went, just got better and better and better.
I used to hate playing against him. He would just work so tirelessly, and you knew he would be there sniffing it out, ratting around. He was just horrible, wasn't he?
You just never knew how he was going to finish. Yeah. Like, you know, with some strikers, you're kind of like, this is their go-to finish. Whereas you could literally just finish in any way possible.
All right.
The back shoe. Sorry, mate.
Explain, guys.
He said he said you just didn't know what sort of finish he was going to do, how he was going to finish it. We played away at Anfield. He scored a back heel. He lobbed me, chipped me with a back heel. Yeah. He back heeled it into the ground. It was wet. It skidded up over me. And I remember doing it and thinking, what are you doing, mate? You're facing away from the goal. There is no possible way you can score it.
Didn't you do the fuzzy afterwards?
I didn't even know what day it was, mate. Honestly, didn't have no clue.
That's what I mean. Like 9 times out of 10, they just set it to someone on the edge of the box.
Yeah.
And like, don't even attempt it. And then
I know.
Hit it into the floor and pull it off.
It's ridiculous, isn't it? Yeah, it's such quick thinking. What a player. All right, then, mate. This has been fantastic. Fraser Forster, thank you so much. Can we say a big thank you quickly to Royal Ascot Golf Club? They've got a lovely little graphic up there on the screen. Thank you for sorting us out with the conference room today. It's a lovely, fantastic golf course. If you get the chance to play it, go and play it. Fraser plays here all the time, by the way. Scratch golfer as well. He's not. Right, Fraser, quickfire questions. What is your bucket list sporting event as a fan? You could go to anything in the world and watch it. What are you watching?
Season after you retire, you go, ticket for anything. Where are you going?
Super Bowl.
Oh yeah, Super Bowl final. Yeah. Good. Yeah, I'll take that. Best football match you've ever been to?
When did you have a season ticket at Newcastle?
Like when I was a kid. I don't know, it's such a hard one.
Did you have a season ticket at Newcastle as a kid?
Yeah.
Who would have been Newcastle the goalies back then?
Like Shea Given, Steve Harper.
They had some bangers against Man United back in the day, didn't they? Do you remember them? Yeah.
Liverpool, those 4-3s, two years in a row,
wasn't
it?
That was early, early doors, weren't it? Collymore and that.
As a young lad then.
Yeah, you would have been, yeah.
Best game I've been to.
We can come back to that one.
Who was your idol growing up, Fraser?
Like Shea Given.
Yeah.
Newcastle fan.
Yeah.
And Steve Harper, really. Yeah. Like, I just love goalkeeping. Like, and being a Newcastle fan. Yeah, probably both of them.
Yeah, love that. Do you have any phobias?
Heights.
Yeah.
Hate them, honestly.
Have you ever done that skywalk at Tottenham?
Nah. I love the idea of doing it, but I just couldn't do it. Honestly, so it's so... You know, like, everyone's like, oh, you're tall, so you shouldn't be scared of heights. Do you know what I mean? Like, yeah, I was waiting for you to say that.
Yeah, it's good.
But, like, yeah, just heights. Hate them.
I like it. any secret talents?
Nah.
Nothing.
Just talentless.
I don't think we've had a footballer yet that has gone, yeah, I'm quite good at this.
They all say the same.
Nah.
just winging it.
Oh, God. If you could live the day in the life of anybody, dead or alive, who would it be?
Sonny.
Son Heung-min.
It's a terrible answer. Yeah, no, I don't know, just day to day, I'd like to see what it was like, what's it like.
Just
know,
a happy man, just wake up happy.
Yeah, so happy, like, such a nice guy. And then, but, like, honestly, like, there'll be hundreds of fans come to training ground, like, each day or week just to wait for him, like...
If they're coming to the training ground, can you imagine him when he goes back home then? Can you imagine how famous he must be the biggest name in South Korea, right?
Honestly, like, when I first joined, we then went to South Korea in pre-season. And I hadn't even met Sonny yet, like, because he was meeting us out there because he like, had international duty. Yeah. So, like, flew in there, turned up at the airport, and there's literally, like, thousands, maybe 10,000 fans. Wow. Just waiting to see him. And like everywhere we went, it was like so many people, like just to see Sonny. And like,
it's nice though, isn't it, to see somebody that's sort of that famous and that well thought of, but he's still so sort of humble and nice.
Yeah, that's the thing. And then like he's got so much time for everyone. I love and that. Like, just treats everyone the same. Doesn't matter if you're like fan or teammate, cleaner, manager, like just the exact same to everyone.
I love that, mate. Final question then. Who is the player you'd most like to have on your team in a quiz? Which Spurs player?
Oh, Ben Davis.
Clever, yeah, smart.
Cleverest guy I've met in football.
Ben Davis. I like it.
Like, he's in, like, but, like, great lad. Really, like, I think he's done a degree.
In what?
Business.
Go on, Ben Davis.
Like, yeah, like, very driven and, like, very clever.
Love that. And then on the opposite side of that coin, then, who would be the player you wouldn't want on your team in a quiz?
Don't want to chuck anyone under the bus.
I know which Spurs player I wouldn't want on the quiz.
Come on.
What?
That's a scandalous answer. But understandable. I don't know, like...
Let's not compromise Fraser.
Yeah.
Let's call it a day.
We'll help you out here, mate. We'll help you out. We'll call it...
I'd say Pape Sarr, just because... He could be, he's probably really clever, but he's just such a nice, quiet guy. Like, you never hear him speak.
Really? Just keep himself to himself?
Yeah, so he probably know the answer, but just not tell you.
You're too embarrassed or quiet to answer.
But, like, nicest guy, just so chilled and humble, but just, like, just, I don't know, just probably wouldn't tell you the answer.
Oh, gosh. But Fraser, thank you so much for coming on the Fozcast. We really appreciate that. It was absolutely fantastic. Up the Fozcast. Well done, mate. Up the Fozcast.
Thanks everybody for watching. We hope you enjoyed the latest episode of the Fozcast. Don't forget to give us a follow on Spotify. Up the Fozcast.